An extraordinary outpouring of grief in North Korea as the nation says goodbye to its supreme leader for only the second time in the nearly 80-year history of the country. Mourners in North Korea have been paying their last respects at the open coffin of the late leader Kim Jong-il. State television showed pictures of his son and heir, Kim Jong-un, and other senior officials at the Memorial Palace. Joining us now from South Korea is John Sudworth, reporter for our partner, the BBC. Good morning, John.
Good morning, John.
So I gather these images are as riveting to the people in South Korea as they are in the North.
Very much so. I think people here are reacting to the news with a mixture of fascination and concern, I think, to be fair. I mean, of course, there's that worry that North Korea is now entering a period of really uncertainty. There have, of course, up until now, been very little moments like this in its history. Power has only changed hands once, back in 1994 when Kim Jong-il took over. He's now attempting to pass power to his son, and it leaves a huge number of questions to be answered about what might come next. He is a very young man, Kim Jong-un, less than 30 years old, totally untried and untested politically, and there is a real worry that maybe not in the first few months, but at some point down the line, we could see a challenge to his legitimacy, the possibility of a power struggle inside the Pyongyang elite. And of course, that would lead many people to be very, very worried then about the possibility of destabilization or even collapse inside what is, after all, a nuclear armed state.
Talking with John Sudworth, reporter for our partner, the BBC in Seoul, South Korea. Comment, if you would, on a report I heard this morning on the BBC, which actually suggested that there were signs of military restrictions inside North Korea from various observation posts around the world, and that the populace's response to some of those crackdowns has been irritation, and that this was surprising to some observers. Have you heard that?
Well, I think we have heard those reports. I think some of them are coming from organizations inside South Korea that monitor and attempt to listen to testimony from inside North Korea. Very difficult to say how reliable some of that stuff is. Interestingly, I have just come back from a briefing with the most senior British diplomat inside Pyongyang, and he describes the mood there as subdued but calm. And he says, despite the pictures we've seen on our TV screens from official North Korean state media of this remarkable outpouring of grief, he says that they have seen people turning up to pay their respects at statues of Kim Jong-il, for example. And although on occasion they've seen large crowds, on occasion he says they've seen large groups, it would be wrong, he says, to describe them as large crowds. Mm. And he says business in the city goes on as normal. So in some ways, a very credible eyewitness, of course, from the heart of the story in Pyongyang. And he seems to be suggesting that, perhaps backing up in some way some of those reports you've mentioned, that people are perhaps not quite as filled with grief and emotion as some of those television pictures suggest.
The South Korean government has sent its condolences to the people of North Korea. I suggest that's more ritual than an actual offering of peace or an outreach to the new government, wouldn't you say?
Well, it's a very difficult decision for the South Korean government to make in these circumstances. There was a huge amount of controversy back in 1994 after the death of the first North Korean leader when South Korea decided not to send a delegation to his funeral. And it was criticized by many people in the South Korean capital for not doing so. The balance, if you like, that it has to strike is this. On one hand, you might consider this an opportunity. We don't know what the shape of things are to come in North Korea. As we've mentioned, Kim Jong-un is a very unknown quantity, but it might just be that this is a moment for for more liberal voices, if there are such voices inside the ruling elite, for reformists, if you like, to step forward. Mm. And it's an opportunity for outside governments to engage with them. So some people might argue that South Korea would be missing an opportunity if it didn't reach out a hand at a time like this. And sending a delegation to the funeral would be a very good way of doing it. On the other hand, this is a very conservative government here in South Korea, much more hawkish. It'll have its own constituency in mind. mind, and many of its supporters would find it very, very distasteful and upsetting because of their politics to see South Korea, essentially in their eyes, stand, you know, side by side at the funeral of what they see as one of the most brutal dictators in world history over the past 100 years or so.
And John Sudworth from Seoul, South Korea, reporting on all of the aftermath of the death of Kim Jong-il there in North Korea. Just one final question. We've seen over the last year that things can happen very, very quickly in the world, particularly in places where it seems as though change is almost impossible. What is the image of unification in South Korea? Is that something that is a more distant goal, almost a fantasy? Or do people have a sense of reality about the possibility that rapid change could proceed here?
That's a very difficult question to answer, because I think to really try to get into the hearts of what South Koreans really think is very nuanced and complex. I think the best way to sum it up is this, that in their daily lives, South Koreans barely give it a thought. The two countries are now so far apart. South Korea is so overwhelmingly more successful and wealthy than North Korea that people, in that sense, have long moved on. They have, you know, daily lives to worry about, money to earn. It's a fast-moving, competitive economy. But I think it's also worth saying that deep down, it does remain an aspiration. You know, it's only 50 years or so since this peninsula was divided, and Koreans can point to 1,300 years of continuous history. And in that sense, I think most people would say that deep down, they do believe that unification is inevitable one day, although paying for it may be a different matter. But it is at moments like this where there is at least a glimmer of a possibility of change on the peninsula, the possibility, however remote, that North Korea may change for the better, that I suppose it comes to the fore. And I wouldn't be surprised if many South Koreans today are possibly daring to hope that maybe, just maybe, things won't be quite as grim in the north as some are predicting, and this is a moment of hope.
John Sudworth, reporter for our partner, the BBC, reporting from Seoul, South Korea. Thanks so much.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.